Hey, welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And welcome back to Harlem, Maria.
It's so good to be home. I hate all the airlines. I hate all the airports. I hate airport food. I hate all of it.
You've been really, really busy traveling like crazy. And we actually checked in with you on Friday to see where you were.
Where's Maria?
Hey, have you guys seen Maria?
Maria?
Yes, Julio?
You go to Nebraska like 10 times a year, it feels like.
You just gave away my location, my undisclosed location. I am in Omaha, Nebraska.
But why do you go there?
I've always had a soft spot for places that get a bum rap. And I feel like, you know, whether it was the South Bronx that was, you know, kind of trashed and forgotten, which it is so vibrant, or whether it's a place like Omaha, which is like kind of in a flyover state of Nebraska. The amount of diversity that I experience in Omaha, they're building here in Omaha, the only place in the world where they're going to have on the same space a Christian church, a mosque, and a Jewish temple.
Whoa.
It's actually very progressive. It's a refugee relocation spot. It's very, you know, hip in that sense, a little flat, big sky.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in, Maria. Safe travels.
Adiositos. Bye.
Monday, March 5th, marked Trump's arbitrary deadline for Congress to decide on DACA. And you, Maria Hinojosa, made a prediction about how you thought it would go down.
I don't think anything is going to happen.
You were right.
I hate that.
Right. And then this whole DACA thing, remember when it was the news of the day? And now it's literally falling out of mainstream headlines. Congress has failed to take action. But you know, Monday, activists marched, protested. They staged sit-ins outside of Speaker Paul Ryan's office. Some were even arrested. There were reports to at least close to 100 were arrested while fighting for Dreamers. The Republicans still insist that the DACA deal, it has to please President Trump's four pillars, and many Democrats are unwilling to budge. In the meantime, Dreamers already with DACA status, Maria? They should be safe, but we're not sure about that.
Who knows, right?
Right. Multiple federal judges, they've ruled that the Department of Homeland Security must continue to renew existing DACA permits. However, the ACLU is worried that the public's going to forget about the Dreamers. And with no one paying attention, the Trump administration just might start quietly deporting them.
Which, you know, hasn't really stopped. I mean, it's been kind of continual. And you know, Julio, the thing that I've been obsessing about.
Yes.
Immigrants, i.e. people who were not born in this country, legal immigrants or undocumented, the Supreme Court ruled that they can be held indefinitely without receiving a bond hearing, even if they're seeking asylum.
But the other thing about this case, Maria, is that this is the status quo. The court in Northern California for the 9th District said, well, if you're going to hold someone indefinitely, they're going to need a bond hearing. And the Supreme Court said, no, 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 no. You can't hold people indefinitely, but you can't get a bond hearing.
Right. We have people being denied due process on a daily basis.
That's the bigger issue.
Now, there is, a silver lining for the people who have green cards and who have been here for 5 years and who have not committed a crime, i.e. never smoked a joint and got caught, never jumped a turnstile, all of which,
never ran a stop sign.
Ticky-tacky crimes,
right.
As a sheriff once told me. If you haven't done any of those and you have no other criminal offense, then you can and should become a citizen. And I think this ruling is going to force those people to go running to become citizens.
So you turned it positive, and so there's a little progress, Maria.
But
we also have to talk about Monday and what happened.
Oh my God.
With Sam Nunberg, the former Donald Trump aide.
Okay, I'm sorry, WTF.
Who made a series of bizarre cable news interviews in which he publicly refused to comply with a grand jury subpoena to hand over emails related to the Mueller investigation. It's going to potentially land him in jail. And he told the Washington Post, let him arrest me. Rumors have circulated that he was day drinking, which when people say day drinking, it's like you're drinking. And then he said he thinks Mueller has something on Trump.
I told you.
But Maria, you know, the Oscars were this weekend and it was a main theme in our roundtable about POC inclusion in the entertainment industry.
Uh-huh, so you recorded this while I was away.
And I can't wait to have you hear this.
I can't wait to listen either. Let it roll.
If I can't work my way to this table, then fuck it. I will make my own table. My table is going to be so lit that you're going to want to come sit at my table.
Uno, dos, tres.
Joining me in Harlem is Elsa Waite, comedian, actor, and motivational speaker.
Something like that.
Welcome back to In the Thick, Elsa.
Thanks for having me back.
And joining us from Bethesda, Maryland, is my good friend Felix Sanchez, co-founder of the National Hispanic Foundation for the Arts. Hey, Felix.
Glad to be here.
So today we'll be discussing POC representation in the entertainment industry. What better timing? Because the Oscars were Sunday night. The Black community has made amazing strides over the past few years towards representation in Hollywood with the hashtag #OscarsSoWhite movement. This year, Jordan Peele was the first Black screenwriter to win Best Original Screenplay in 90 years for Get Out. Filipino-American songwriter Robert Lopez took home the Oscar for co-writing with his wife, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Remember Me, from the animated film Coco. And then there was Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph, who should have been the host of the show. They were talking about whiteness at the Oscars.
When we came out together, we know some of you were thinking, are the Oscars too Black now?
But we just want to say, don't worry. There are so many more white people to come to.
So many. We just came from backstage, and there are tons of them back there.
And then there was Ashley Judd.
Diversity, inclusion, intersectionality. That's what this year has promised us.
And Kumail Nanjiani.
Some of my favorite movies are movies by straight white dudes about straight white dudes. Now straight white dudes can watch movies starring me, and you relate to that. It's not that hard. I've done it my whole life.
So the sun is just
So while the majority of the Oscar nominations and awards this year went to white people, it did seem like there was actually some progress.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe not ideally what we would like, because, I mean, yeah, we were there, but we ain't win all the awards I think we should have won.
You're of the camp of, like, Get Out got robbed.
Get Out got robbed.
Felix, what do you think?
When it comes to the show, the presentation of the Oscars, yes, there was definitely inclusion. But inclusion has to begin at the front end, which is in the casting side. The one thing that I thought was really amazing was when Frances McDormand, who won the Best Actress Award, talked about an inclusion writer, and that is putting into the contract that there has to be racial and ethnic and gender diversity as a part of the cast, the crew.
So, like, I mean, why do we have to have an inclusion writer?
We have to have an inclusion writer because historically we're not in those spaces.
Right.
I think we should also be cognizant of the fact that we can't just be throwing Black and brown people into a white narrative and be like, make it brown,
When someone says an inclusion writer, it's like I always think, are they just thinking Black and white, or are they thinking, Asian and gender and sexual preference? And you see the problems that are still there. Like, for example, in Three Billboards, when I looked at the cast at the end of the movie, it had Latino and Latino number two. I mean, how could you have Black and Black number two, as an equivalency,
right?
Or woman and woman number two? But they have no problem thinking of us as really almost, a salt shaker.
So many POC voices were left out. I want to focus on the Latinx community for a minute, because only 3% of speaking roles in films in the last 10 years were Latino. That's according to a study from UCLA. There hasn't been a Latinx Best Actor, Actress Oscar nomination in 6 years. And there's only been one Latino who won Best Actor, and it was Jose Ferrer for Cyrano de Bergerac in 1951.
I was about to say, I don't even know who that is.
You're like, what? Yeah, 1951.
Okay. 1951, that makes sense.
That's, and then the Chilean film A Fantastic Woman took home an Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film, and Guillermo del Toro of Mexico won Best Director, and his movie The Shape of Water won Best Picture at this year's Oscars. Then there was Coco with Best Animated Film. Yet, not one U.S.-born Latinx took home an Oscar.
Elisa Gonzalez last night, Daniela Vega, Salma Hayek. They are international Latinos. Hollywood still needs to get woke, as it were. They get part of this, but they get it wrong.
Representation is still a huge issue for Latin Americans and Latinos across the United States, but let's talk about one major win for the Black community, which, of course, is Black Panther. To me, it feels more like a movement than just a movie. That's how powerful it is. So how has Black Panther united Black people all over the world?
I think for regardless of who you are, black, brown, yeah. or whatever, everyone was like, this is a big major picture that, you know, has very little to do with white people, you know, and the white people that were in the movie were there as the villain or in a support role, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And it was very representative of the black diaspora. Yeah. Of black people all over the world.
Everyone who's saying that representation matters, like this yeah. thing of Oscar's so white, it's been going on. Like Black Panther became sort of like the case study that is groundbreaking.
Right.
And I'm going to say it straight up, but I think Latinos do not have their shit together when it looks at the, when you look at the black community in terms of entertainment.
I mean, I don't know where the Latino Black Panther is.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Totally.
We are about 30 years behind the black experience in entertainment because we've never had the sense of connection to each other the way that, that African Americans do in today's world. It's a much more global relationship, whereas Latinos are still very fractured in their own identity and relationship. It's media literacy. Latinos for, you know, 40, 50 years have never really seen themselves represented. So they've grown up without the feeling that they needed to be represented, and they still show up in big numbers. And the industry knows this. And so the industry says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
The problem is that the mainstream entertainment industry still views things in a binary. When we talk about race,
right.
we're always talking about white and black. I often get tired of stories about interracial couples because it's always white and.
Right.
Multi-generational Latinos don't have a lot of images to aspire to, and we want the entertainment industry to explain us positively, or at least in a modern and contemporary way, as opposed to a static portrayal.
Yeah.
The internal message to our own community is to wake up and understand why these representations matter, because they don't really understand it.
Right.
And that if you're not represented, that is why you can have the someone like the president put a false narrative on our community, because the profile of who we are is so thin.
Yeah.
And it begs explanation. And so if you want to explain it negatively, go for it, because it will work.
Hey, this is Stephanie LeBeau, producer for In the Thick. We love reading reviews from our listeners, and we love to share them with you too. Here's a great one from listener Stace969. A great show that crafts the everyday news, which is like trying to drink from a fire hose these days, from a POC perspective, with a big heart, honest critique of all sides, and insight. Thanks for listening. And if you're a fan of In the Thick, try our sister podcast, Latino USA. This week, Latino USA goes to the rodeo. From crazy bull riding to old school vaqueros, the rodeo is where old Mexican traditions and all-American cowboys meet. Subscribe to Latino USA wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In the Thick. I'm Julio Regalo Varela, and I'm with Elsa Waithe and Felix Sanchez. We're talking POC representation in Hollywood. Let's get back to the conversation. We know Black Panther is huge right now. It's on track to make over $1 billion worldwide.
It's going to break all the records.
Yeah, we're talking Star Wars big. Yet, people of color are still underrepresented in Hollywood. So what's the problem here? I mean, Elsa, you've started initiatives like your monthly showcase, Affirmative Laughter, because you felt underrepresented as a black queer woman in the comedy scene.
Yeah.
Is that the way to go? Do we have to create our own spaces separate from mainstream comedy in Hollywood?
I've always tried to get myself on two planes. One, I want a seat at the table. But secondly, if you're not going to let me sit at the table, and if I can't work my way to this table, then fuck it, I will make my own table. And then my table is going to be so lit that you're going to want to come sit at my table. And what I decided to do with Affirmative Laughter,
yeah.
people ask me all the time, like, how is there a diversity problem, A, in comedy,
yeah.
right, where comedy is lots of diverse voices, and B, how is there a diversity problem in New York City? There is. And quite often I would be the only black person on a lineup. I'd be the only woman on a comedy lineup, or I'd be the only gay person, or you just hire me as that one person to fill all three of those
slots.
You'd
be one big-ass check
mark. I'm just the walking diversity hire. So Affirmative Laughter, the way I do it is it's a diverse lineup. It's usually woman-heavy, POC-heavy, queer-heavy, and then just one white guy. Just so everybody watching and everyone who sees the show and everyone who sees the flyers realizes how weird it is just to have one
right. one major win, staying on Wakanda, because I always, whenever I'm in doubt, I always
Wakanda
go back
forever.
To Wakanda really representing what Africa could be without colonization and white supremacy. And remember this example of Lupita Nyong'o's commenting on no one in Black Panther straightened their hair.
Yeah.
But the kind of shaming or rejecting of kinks and curls is new. And that right. did come with the white man.
Right.
And so in this story, Wakanda is a country that's never been colonized. They don't know the first thing about the white world.
Right.
And so they embrace themselves.
Let's talk about the power of seeing communities of color thrive on screen without whitewashing, because that to me feels like a change. How will this affect our society? I mean, there's Wakanda curriculum being taught in schools now.
Yes. That's the obvious takeaway, is that we need authentic and real representation of ourselves on screen. But I think what was even more important with Black Panther is, if you really watched, it modeled proper ally behavior as well.
From the white
sidekick character. When he spoke out of turn, he was wolfed into place. What he did could have been accomplished also by another Black person. So he was not there because he was the special white. He had to take instruction. He had to play the back role. There have been other movies, and there will be other movies that authentically show Blackness or brownness on screen. But I think what was very unique about this was showing the white person wasn't the hero. He didn't save the day. He had to take leadership behind Black and brown folk. And I think that was a very subtle message, but almost even a little more important.
Okay, so let's move on to our final segment, which we call Sin Pendejadas, or basically no bullshit. All right, so another problem we see in Hollywood is the whitening of roles, you know, where white actors play other races and ethnicities. Even colorism, where lighter-skinned people of color often get certain roles. In fact, Amanda Stenberg reportedly walked away from the role of Shuri in Black Panther because she found it problematic to the plot to play the role as a lighter-skinned biracial person. She told CBC Arts that she recognizes 100% that there are spaces that she should just not take up. And then we have the Leslie Kahn story, where Hollywood acting coach Leslie Kahn was caught on tape suggesting a Jewish actress change her name to Rosa Ramirez and be, quote, more Latin in order to get a role.
Go to the head cha-cha, tell them you're Latin. Wear something fucking red. Okay. Wear some fucking sparkly earrings. Change your goddamn name and let's just do an experiment. You know what I mean? Just fucking come up with the most Latin name you can come up with. The Latin could actually get you interviews for representation.
So, no bullshit, and reflecting on hashtag inclusion writers, is this on white actors to step up?
I've said that for a very long time. The Motion Picture Association of America last year put out its annual theatrical statistical report. And when you add up the African-American, Latino, and Asian numbers, we are at 49% of the box office.
Damn.
The industry says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If Latinos keep showing up to films without Latinos, then, what's the big deal? It's incumbent on us to explain why that's an important issue and why their power should amass together and make a difference.
Right. So, Elsa, do white actors have to step up and make a stand? Or
absolutely. Absolutely. And I say that in the same. I often say that, like, okay, Black people didn't create white supremacy, so it's not really on us to fix white supremacy, right? Like, if it were up to minorities, which I got to stop saying we're the global majority, we wouldn't want to give our roles away to white people. I wouldn't want to always play the crackhead baby mama, you know what I'm saying, if it were up to me. So, no, it's not on me to fix the problem. You know, you white actor, white comedian, you know this ain't a role for you. Set it down. Give it back.
So I think whatever table like gets created, Elsa and Felix, I hope both you guys are on that table with me, because that table is lit.
Serving up hot fire.
Elsa Waithe, comedian, actor, and motivational speaker. I love it. And Felix Sanchez, co-founder of the National Hispanic Foundation for the Arts. Thank you so much for joining me on In the Thick.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Creo en lo imposible. Que la locura más cuerda es buscar cómo ser libre. Creo en lo imposible. Que de nuestras espaldas brotarán las alas que nos harán volar invencible.
Maria, what did you think about the Oscars?
It felt really contrived. And it feels so much like it was written by white men. to just like, you know, make sure we insert the Muslim dancing. Make sure that you insert another Latino and Latina.
So let me ask you this one about, because one of the things that I'm stuck about all this, at least with the Latino representation, these Mexican directors aren't really presenting Latinos in the United States. That's one of the things I'm hearing from a lot of people. What do you think?
And I'm Mexican and I'm proud. You know, I mean, I'm really, really happy that they are winning. At the same time, it is true that we need to really give a voice to Latinos and Latinas from the United States. I guess I would call myself that, even though I was born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Let's remember that one out of every four movie tickets in the United States is bought by a Latino or Latina in the United States. Hello. Mm. On the other hand, you know, I was really happy to see Guillermo saying, dude, I'm Mexican, and I'm like, I hate the fact that it's 2018 and I have to be like, yes, it's great to be Mexican. I hate that. But I was also like, thank you for saying that, Guillermo.
And then Elsa's table comment is still, I still am breathing it. Like, it's exactly what we do, Maria. Like, create your own table.
Exactly.
And it's going to be lit.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. And you know what? Word of mouth, yo. Seriously, that is how podcasts grow. So please, word of mouth it. Just made up a word. Also, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. And then there you can obviously spread it all out to your friends. You can like us on Facebook. And our producer is Stephanie LeBeau, the one and only. Our intern is Nicole Rothwell. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, Kept, and ZZK Records, and Steph LeBeau. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. Ciao.
Nos vemos.
But the power that we have in the ballot box, I'm sorry, the what?
The movie box.
The soap box.
The
what?
Box office.
The power that we have at the box office.